Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Rudy Obias, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies.
That's right. Happy New Year, Rudy. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm surviving. I made it through the holidays. It was very busy. How was your holiday vacation? We don't really get a holiday break necessarily.
No, this is a year-round job. I took a couple days off, and I spent the holidays with my family in Chicago, and so that was a blast.
Cool. Yeah, I traveled to Mansfield. Which is, well, you know, Ohio geography.
So it's 45 minutes away.
Yeah, it's like 50 minutes. It's literally, I think it's like exactly an hour from my driveway to my in-law's driveway. And yet they still like, oh, you have to drive so far. I'm like, no, seriously, it's like an hour and we do our thing and then we come home and they want us to like come over there and spend the night. I'm like, that's not happening. No, we're just going to go up there. We'll eat dinner with you, maybe play a game, open watch. Presents.
Maybe
then we're back home. No, I can't watch a movie with them because they got my brother-in-law. I can say this because nobody listens to my show in my family. My brother-in-law has this like 50-inch high-def television.
Yeah.
And he's got I asked him, I said, oh, do you have a Blu-ray player? And you know what he says? He goes, I'm not sold on Blu-ray yet.
Well, why have that big TV then?
Exactly. I mean, he's like, yeah, he gets the HD feed from the cable, but how can you not be sold on Blu-ray? And I understand like 4 years ago when Blu-ray players are $400 or $500 a piece.
Yeah, they're pretty cheap nowadays, actually.
Oh, yeah. You can get a fully networked, completely wireless Blu-ray player with everything you need for like $70.
Yeah, that's probably about right how much you would want to spend anyway. And Blu-rays themselves are pretty inexpensive now as well.
They're getting to the point that sometimes the Blu-rays, I've seen Blu-rays that are cheaper in terms of first hitting the streets. They're less expensive than DVDs.
You should have a good talking to your brother-in-law.
Yeah, we tried that once and that didn't work. He also will like, he'll like, if like a TV show's coming through and it's in 4:3, this is getting technically geeky for some people, but if it's full frame, like on a regular television, he'll set his TV to stretch it out.
Okay.
So everybody's distorted.
Uh-huh. Everyone looks really like...
Everyone looks fat.
Yeah.
Like he loves Scrubs and he's watching Scrubs. And I'm like, do you realize that? Well, no, but it's widescreen. I'm like, well, yeah, but it wasn't shot in widescreen. So everyone looks like a funhouse mirror. So
like they made this before widescreen was even an option.
Yeah. Oh, I can't. So yeah, none of that movie garbage going on there. But otherwise, I mean, it was a fun holiday. I said this. I put on Twitter today. I said there's presents under the tree and there's still some money in the bank. So I consider it a successful holiday week.
Yeah. If you can go into the new year with some money in your pocket, that's a win.
Yes. So, anyways, real quick, like go through the paperwork here. How to get a hold of us? You can go to fatguysatthemovies.com, or you can reach us on iTunes by searching Fat Guys or Fat Guys at the Movies, and we'll pop right up along with our other ancillary shows and products and that sort of thing. You can go to facebook.com/FGATM and ask us a question, like our page, and all that good stuff. Email fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can give us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. I don't think we have a voicemail. We haven't had a voicemail in a while, so you know, get with the program, people.
Yeah, call it.
That's right. So tell us, Rudy, where do we get a hold of you? You've been on the show quite a few times. But
it feels like I'm doing double duty here with Fat Guys at the Movie Network, because I think last week I was on Celluloid Spotlight.
Were you? Yeah. What did you talk about? Were you the guest one of the weeks? I don't listen to that show.
One of the shows on your network, Kevin.
It was probably Celluloid Spotlight. What was the topic?
We talked about 2011, the movies of 2011.
Oh, okay. Well,
like
good.
The best, worst, and forgotten movies of this past year.
Ah, yes.
But your listeners can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias, RUDIE_OBIAS, Shakya.com, where I am the movies editor, and everything that is Rudy at RudyObias.com.
Everything that is Rudy.
Yes. It's a lot of stuff on there.
There's a lot of Rudy. All Rudy. All the time. So, you know, we talked a little bit about how our holidays went. You know, it's a light week. There's really literally only one movie opening that's new. There's limited there's expansion of movies. I believe Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy is going into wider release. I don't know how wide it's going to be this week, though. But we talked about that a couple weeks ago. And I think, like, Shame opens wider next week. But right now, it's just there's only The Devil Inside. But we'll talk about that in a little bit in the next segment. Wanted to see what your thoughts. And this may be a little bit of a rehash for people who've listened to you on that other show. But what did you think of 2011? What were your in just real general hits and misses? What did you like seeing? What did you not like seeing?
I thought 2011 in terms of movies was a pretty solid year in movies. It wasn't as good as 2010, mm-hmm. but. Or 2009, but I don't think it was as a horrible year as what a lot of people would say. There was a lot of good movies out there, movies like Attack the Block. I know you didn't like this movie, but The Tree of Life is a phenomenal film, in my opinion. Okay. Horrible movies this year, I Hate Your Highness. I think that's one of the movies ever, despite the fact that I laughed.
Ever made! Oh my gosh, it's made the worst movie ever made.
In 2011. I laughed quite a bit during that movie, but at the end of the day, that movie just relied on one joke. And, you know, I don't know how much I can enjoy that one joke on repeated viewings.
You laughed quite a bit, but then you feel shame and regret for doing that.
But I think so far 2011 in terms of movies was pretty all right. It wasn't as bad as what a lot of people would think it would be.
Well, see, what's funny is I thought 2010 was... In general, I thought a relatively soft year. Mm-hmm. I wasn't. There was a lot of movies that I was just like, eh, about. I don't like to look at a year as saying if you take your top 10 and your worst 10. I don't think that's indicative because there's always going to be in any given year. There's always going to be at least ten movies that any one person is going to find awesome.
Yeah,
and there's going to be at least 10 movies that people are going to find dreadful. Any person. So getting a top 10, bottom 10 list that doesn't count in terms of the movie. I think as a whole though. I thought 2010 was relatively weak. There were a lot of movies that I was like sort of like just meh about. 2011, on the other hand, while there weren't an awful lot of great movies, there were very few sort of like that five-star movie that came out. I think I only gave like one or maybe two movies five stars. But I thought there were a lot of good four-star movies and three-and-a-half-star movies. Movies that were like, oh, better than average. Oh, that was actually pretty cool. And there's a lot of movies that I thought were a lot of fun that people forget happened. And I thought, in particular, the spring of 2011 was a great time for a couple of reasons. I mentioned what?
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, okay. I mentioned this off the air, and I said there was a string of releases in the spring that were... At the very least, they were original. Even if they weren't great, they were original movies. They were new movies. They weren't just remakes or rehashes or adaptations or sequels. And if they were an adaptation, it was something like The Adjustment Bureau, which was an adaptation of a short story that really hadn't been done yet.
And we also had Sucker Punch.
Which I think wasn't as bad as everyone says.
I enjoyed Sucker Punch. I just wanted to take an easy jab at Zack Snyder.
But I mean, stuff like Paul, we mentioned Paul off the air. Paul is, you know, it wasn't a great movie, but it was different, you know, and Drive Angry, that was a lot of fun. You know, Limitless was good. I thought Source Code was good. There's a lot of stuff from earlier in the year that I think got forgotten, and they're not great movies, but it's still, you know, for a Friday night and you're looking for something to watch, you could do a lot worse.
Definitely.
So, with that, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to maybe talk a little bit more 2011 movies and then talk about the new movie out, The Devil Inside.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies.
Whoop, whoop. Sorry about that. Did that throw you off?
Now the party has started.
That's right. Raise the roof. I'm suffering from a bit of a holiday hangover. Not from drinking, but just from eating garbage. You don't eat as much garbage, though, because you're like a healthy dude.
Yeah, so I'm not eating that many cookies. Although there were a lot of cookies and chocolates and a lot of good goodies at my aunt's house in Chicago, but I had my good share of it, but I restrained myself for the most part.
Would you eat egg products and that sort of thing?
Yes and no. I guess it depends on how much egg is in it.
Okay. It doesn't like knock you on your back. You're not like you eat a cookie and you'd be like, there's egg, and you like pass out from pain.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. Not me. There's egg. Give me more. Yeah, I mean, it's always so tough during the holidays because there's so much good food. And you're in, for us, for my family, we always do for my nuclear family. We do, like, on Christmas Eve, we always have a bunch of stuff we're doing. We have a special dinner, and I make breakfast, and we're cooking cookies and all that kind of thing. And then Christmas Day is Christmas Day, and it's just candy and cookies and food that's bad for you. And then on New Year's Eve, and then we went to my in-laws on the 30th and had a whole nother kind of Christmas celebration. And then on the 31st, it's all the Christmas. We do a New Year's Eve thing, and we make, like, appetizers and that sort of thing. And then New Year's Day, we're having roast pork and sauerkraut and mashed potatoes. It is just nonstop eating in this family. It is no wonder I'm as big as I am.
It's like, it's no wonder why the show is called Fat Guys at the
It's like, yeah, you know, for gosh, going on 5 years, everyone's been like, what are you going to do when you lose weight? What are you going to call it? I'll be like, I'll cross that bridge when it comes.
It's like, at this point, I'll stop watching movies before.
Yeah, the word movies is going to be more obsolete than fat in this title at some point. Anyways, what are going back to talking a little bit about 2011 and just in general, was there anything that you liked in terms of trends or popularity, anything just in general about entertainment that took you going one way or the other?
Well, I was actually really impressed with Marvel Studios. I was wondering how this whole Avengers thing was going to actually turn out, because this year in 2011 we got not one but two movies from Marvel Studios. We had Thor and Captain America, the first Avenger. Yeah, yeah. And that was going to come out this summer. At the beginning of the summer we're going to get one, at the end of the summer we're going to get the other. So I was kind of worried that maybe the quality would go down from Marvel Studios because of these two releases. Yeah, but yeah. It actually, they upped their game with it, in my opinion. I really enjoyed Thor, and then I was actually kind of blown away by Captain America. And I was more interested in Thor than Captain America, but I ended up liking Captain America quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting in terms of the superhero movies is I think the big litmus test is going to be how the Avengers is. Now, Avengers is, and this is getting into anticipated films for 2012, which we'll talk about a little more in the next segment, but it's in the catbird seat. It is the first big release, and everything's out of its way. I don't even know if they've scheduled a counter-programming film, the obligatory romantic comedy, to go up against it. And so it's set. It is primed. Now, if this fails, that's going to be a big failure for Disney, because it's the first one Disney's doing, because they now own Marvel.
Yeah.
But it's also, if it fails, it might be, you know, drop-off for superhero movies, but I think it's primed to at least set the tone for summer of 2012.
It's definitely going to set the tone. I don't know if it's going to make that huge big box office number that a lot of people think that this movie is going to make, solely because you're going to get the same audience. You know, yeah. You're not going to combine the box office for Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America combined. It's really the same people that are going to see this movie anyway.
Yeah, it'll be curious to see if it does the $100 million opening weekend that the Iron Man movies did, but the Thor, all the other movies failed to reach. So we'll see on that. One of the things I thought that was really neat about 2011 was you actually had, people who listen to the show know I'm a big proponent of 3D. Not 100%, and there's exceptions, but I love the fact that you had what I would call master directors dip their toe into the 3D channel. The fact that both Martin Scorsese and Steven Spielberg did their first 3D movies in 2011. Now, I mean, while neither of them were huge domestic hits, they were both, I thought, exceptionally well done. And it was neat to see somebody, especially what Scorsese did with Hugo,
yeah,
basically say, hey, kids, this is how you should use 3D.
See, and that's why I think Hugo is actually going to, maybe this is a little out there in thinking, but I think it's going to get nominated for Best Picture because of it.
Oh, it'll definitely be nominated for Best Picture.
And Scorsese will be nominated for Best Director because of the 3D factor. If Hollywood really wants to sell 3D, they want to also show that, hey, you don't have to be a movie like Avatar to do it. You can be a world-class director like Martin Scorsese and use it as well. Yeah. And it's just not for big, gigantic movies like Avatar. It's also for nice, quiet, little small ones like Hugo. Not to say that Hugo is a small, quiet movie, but I think...
But it's more intimate. It's not your big tentpole release.
Yeah. And Lord knows, Hugo did not make as much money as Avatar.
No. Well, nothing's made as much money as Avatar. Except for Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas. But no, but overall, I thought that 2011, I was very happy with what ended up with 2011, while there are movies I didn't like.
I think that's every year. Every year you're going to get movies that you're not going to like.
Oh, obviously. Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think that I think we're moving into a new generation. I think you're seeing more digital film, digital projection. And I think at least what I've experienced, with the exception of one film this year, I've actually seen the brightness settings done properly. This is not just 3D, but in general, brightness settings set appropriately from digital projectors. Because there's that period of time where people were dimming them down, not just for 3D, but in general, because it makes the light bulbs last longer. But you get a bad experience. And you know, as much as I think Michael Bay's an idiot, I give him credit for him and David Yates for pushing the issue and making it a national news story, at least in the entertainment field, to set the brightness settings properly for when they projected Harry Potter and Transformers. Because if you don't have them done right, it looks bad.
Yeah, and you know, as bombastic as Transformers 3 was, you know, I mean, adding to, I guess, a lot of viewers' misery of that movie, you know, it being darker was not one of them. I mean, I actually liked Transformers 3, and I know you and I have this argument about Michael Bay, but at least I enjoyed the last 45 minutes of Transformers Dark of the Moon.
Yeah.
But to Michael Bay's credit, the 3D was phenomenal, and the IMAX was just impeccable.
Yeah, I think, and that's another thing we're seeing showing up from the movies in 2011. There's a bigger push to get the IMAX experience. And I thought Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, did that probably the most effectively as anything else by releasing itself a week early in the IMAX, and plus being a fantastic movie, and breaking the top five at 400 screens.
I don't think IMAX is ever going to be that. Although I like IMAX more than 3D, I don't think IMAX is going to ever have as many movies in IMAX than 3D has movies in 3D, solely because there's not that many IMAX screens out there. There are more 3D screens than IMAX ones.
Oh, yeah, definitely now. And, well, the other thing with IMAX is you have to originate on IMAX. You can't just blow up a print, which they do too many times. And I think the fact that they're mastering stuff with 70 millimeter, which like when The Dark Knight came out, and we'll get that with The Dark Knight Rises, I think that that's a good thing. So.
And also IMAX doesn't have that same quality control, I guess. I mean, there's so many IMAX screens out there that don't have the standard of IMAX. I mean, there's real IMAX and then there's fake IMAX. And I guess it's hard to tell which is which if you're not a avid moviegoer.
Fake IMAX still looks pretty good. They used to have a true full-blown IMAX screen in Columbus, and then it lost its license or whatever, and then it moved to these AMCs, which were retrofitted. But I've seen the IMAX movies in these retrofitted screens, and they still look phenomenal, especially when it's, like, digitally originated. Like, say what you want to about Tron or that the Jim Carrey Christmas Carol or Megamind. All three of those movies I saw in the IMAX screen, and they look fantastic.
I feel cheated, though. I feel cheated that I'm not getting the true IMAX.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right. But the thing is, I think digital projection on IMAX actually looks better than standard projection, simply because you don't have to deal with the gate weave, which sometimes cause problems, especially if you're doing 3D. You know, with that, you know, we're going to go off on that. We got to go to a break, and we're going to play the trailer for The Devil Inside, which is another Exorcist movie, in January, and we'll maybe talk about it for a minute and a half when we get back.
When I was about 8 years old, my mother murdered three people.
Police arrived at the home.
Had committed these murders during an exorcism.
An
exorcism performed on her. The Holy Church got involved. She was transferred to the Centrino Mental Hospital in Rome. So here I am. You start wondering, is it in my genes? Am I gonna flip out one day?
If you really want to help your mother, you need a better understanding of exorcism.
What do you suggest?
I need to see a real one.
22 miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies. We just laid out the Devil Inside trailer. I don't, you know, they're not screening this. And the only screening that happens this week is actually conflicting with the awards dinner for our local critic organization. Which, and I think there's another one that night as well for Man on the Ledge. And last time this happened, it was Country Strong, that they literally moved the screening from like a Wednesday to a Thursday, I think to conflict with the local awards screening, the local awards dinner, so that none of the critics would go.
But that's an Oscar-nominated movie in Country Strong.
Well, it was nominated for the song, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
The title as the Oscar-nominated Country Strong.
So, yeah, we'll see. I don't have a whole lot to say. It's sort of like it's January. It's time for an Exorcist movie. Because didn't last year we had The Rite come out like right at the beginning of the week?
Yeah. I believe The Rite came out like January or February, but definitely early in the year.
It was right around. It was right around. It was like the first or second week. I think Season of the Witch was the first week of the year.
Yep, that Season of the Witch was the first. That was a good way to get the year started.
Well, you know what's funny is I went and saw Season of the Witch, and it was kind of here's what's funny about movies like this for me. I actually kind of like going to see these movies this time of year because I'm so inundated with award films. The Rite was released in January 28th. So, but I'm so inundated with award films that it's kind of nice. When I saw Season of the Witch, I saw it for $5. I went on a Friday morning, saw it for $5 at the local, the AMC actually here in Columbus has a deal that you can, if you go before noon and you see it, it's $5. I was the only one in the theater. and it was in this AMC 30. And it was like the farthest screen. It looked like I was going to get murdered going back there because there's nobody there. But yeah, but it was kind of fun to watch just because I'm like, well, it's not good. it was like the way it was when I saw, I watched The Darkest Hour last week. I went to the theater and saw The Darkest Hour and I'm like, oh, it's terrible. But it was refreshing, you know, after watching like Albert Nobbs and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Yeah, I guess January. It's refreshing to see bad movies because we're watching so many good ones right now.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Cursed came out, what, like 5 or 6 years ago, the werewolf movie. And that came out the weekend the Oscars was airing. And I'm like, it's perfect for Oscar weekend because it's not at all like any of the movies being nominated.
Well, last year in January, we had The Green Hornet. Which wasn't, I didn't feel it was a horrible movie. That was actually quite enjoyable, you know?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're right. I think that it's, I think there's something fun, at least for me, about watching a movie from, you know, a movie completely out of its element.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of respect for that because I get so overrun. And even this year, I made a point to really keep up with my award films. So I have seen so many award movies that you just want to watch one with stupid badass, just ass bad, not badass, but ass bad special effects and terrible dialogue. There's something oddly refreshing about that.
Yeah, you need a cleansed palate.
Yeah. So by the time you get to February, you get that out of your system, and then they're just crappy movies again.
Well, movies really don't start getting, I guess, consistently good until like the spring, like you were talking about in a couple segments ago with this past year with Paul and Sucker Punch and Hannah, which I enjoyed quite a bit. Those are movies that came out in the springtime, and I found that kind of refreshing that it was like one week after another, it was pretty good movies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I have to say that, yeah, the springtime is a fun time for movies because these are movies that come out that aren't quite strong enough to make it in the big summer. Because here's the thing, when you get a movie out in the summer, if it's a big tentpole release and it fails miserably, it's just bad. It's really bad. But, and then there's so much counter programming that's just like, let's release this turd against the latest superhero movie. And yeah, they tend to be bad, but yeah, I kind of have an affinity for January movies. So, anyways, speaking of movies, the Devil Inside gets a preemptive suck. The one thing I do find funny about this, the advertisement for it, they're like, the Vatican does not endorse this movie.
Does the Vatican endorse any movie?
I'm pretty sure the Vatican didn't endorse Toy Story 3.
I know the Vatican was pretty much against Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Like, is that really a selling point, though?
I mean, you can put that on any movie. You can sit there and be like, oh gosh, you can be War Horse. The Vatican doesn't endorse War Horse. It's like they also didn't endorse, you know, they don't endorse Straw Dogs. They're not into rape.
But perhaps in the Devil Inside, it's like the Vatican's trying to hide something. Yeah. And the release of this movie would shed light on that mystery that they're trying to hide.
Because I'm sure that the movie from that first week of release in January is always a quality flick that always shines light on the world. I'm sure they didn't endorse Season of the Witch, which, like we said, was last year's first of the year release. But anyways, it gets a preemptive suck. Box office for New Year's weekend, Mission Impossible won again. And actually, every single release in the top, well into the top 10, beyond the top 10, each release saw a bump in box office from the Christmas weekend.
Yeah, which is a good thing, I feel.
Yeah.
That more people are going out to see movies, not just opening weekend, mm-hmm. but the week after.
Yeah, I think the biggest botch of the year was Hollywood just screwing up their release schedule in December. It looked like they just didn't know what they were doing. But you know, these movies, it's, you know, it was Mission Impossible 1, and then you had Sherlock Holmes, and then a little bit of distance before Alvin and the Chipmunks and Dragon Tattoo. Which, here's the thing, let me issue the Dragon Tattoo. A lot of people are saying, well, it's a bomb. It's not a bomb. Oh,
I don't think it's a bomb.
No.
I mean, it did pretty poorly its first week that it was released, but it was going up against so many other movies that you want to take your family to.
Let's go see the rape movie.
I don't think families were going out to see The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. They were going out to see Tintin. They were going out to see We Bought a Zoo and War Horse, and that's good. But I feel The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is one of these movies that's going to have legs. That's going to do well in January, mm-hmm. definitely, and it looks like it's doing pretty well right now. And I don't know if it's going to get to that $100 million mark, but I don't think it's a bomb.
I think it's got a good shot. It's at almost $56 million after last weekend, just in general.
I feel like last year, if True Grit came out last year, or Black Swan that came out last year, well, those were bombs because they didn't do very well the opening weekend, but...
They eventually did better. But here's the thing with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. If you look at David Fincher's filmography, there's only two movies that have made over $100 million domestically. And that was Benjamin Button, mm-hmm. which was only 127. It wasn't like it made 190 million. It was only 127. And then Seven, just barely cracked 100 million. That was, of course, 17 years ago. 16, 17 years ago. But I mean, movies like The Social Network, which everyone reads as this phenomenally huge hit, The Social Network, it topped out with 97 million domestically.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I honestly don't expect The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo to make much less than The Social Network. I think when all's said and done, I think The Dragon Tattoo is going to be fine. Yeah. It's what the make or break thing is going to be. How well it does overseas.
I think it will do well overseas because this is a property that comes from Sweden, that comes from Europe. Yeah. This outside of America, this is probably bigger than this phenomenon is probably bigger in the rest of the world than it is in America.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It seems like the rest of the world like David Fincher films as well. So I think The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo doesn't really have much to worry about in terms of box office.
No, I don't think so. So that was a good box office. What do you think is going to win this weekend?
Ooh. Maybe another go for Mission Impossible.
I think Mission Impossible will win again. I think you're right. I think it's going to be followed up pretty closely. I think that Sherlock and Alvin, the kids' movies, which includes Alvin, is gonna take a big dip this week because kids are back in school. I think War Horse is gonna scooch up. I think it's gonna be Mission Impossible, War Horse, and then sort of like
actually do a little bit more work as well.
Which one?
We Bought a Zoo.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I mean, it's
a lot of good buzz from families, and you know it was up 41% from the week before. So I think perhaps We Bought a Zoo might crack that top five.
It might. It might. Yeah. No, I think that you'll see that show up a little bit more. But then I think where do you think The Devil Inside is going to end up? I think Devil Inside is going to end up. It's not going to be top five.
It's going to end up with The Devil. I don't think it's going to be top five.
It'll be lucky to make $10 million over the weekend. So those are our official predictions. You can bank on it. Go take your money and put it on Vegas odds to win.
We are not liable if you lose.
Well, Rudy is. send your bills to Rudy Ovias, care of Twitter. Because I'm sure he'll get it that way.
Care of Twitter.
Anyways, let's talk about 2012. First of all, before we start talking about what we're most anticipating in 2012, what are you going to be doing anything different this year than what you did last year? That's a very vague question. Let me tell you what I'm going to do, and then you'll know kind of what I'm saying.
Okay.
I know a lot of people, what's become very popular, especially with Twitter and some of these social networking sites with like I Check Movies and Get Glue and that kind of thing. And
yeah.
Is people like to keep track of the movies they've seen. And I don't do that. I started trying to once, and it was, I don't like signing on to stuff because I see so many things that I'll forget to check in or whatever. So while I know a lot of people like to keep track of all the movies they've seen, it may not be a big deal because I once counted how many DVDs I reviewed over 2011, and it was something like 250.
Oh man!
And that's not even including all the stuff I saw in the theaters.
Yeah,
And that includes TV shows as well. That's the other reason why I don't get into the tallying of the movies because the TV shows, I'll spend a lot of time watching TV and DVD of television shows that you know that takes hours compared to a movie. And so I've seen, if you really want to like start cranking up the hours I spend watching something on I don't know if this is something to brag about, but how many hours I spend watching a screen, it's thousands course of the year.
I'm up there too, but I think the difference between we do this for a living, this is our jobs.
Yeah,
we're not normal people in that respect. We don't and so I think I used to keep a running tally of what movies I would watch. There are definitely strong years when I would just be really consistent with that. I haven't done it recently, and I'm actually looking back to getting into doing that. But I think we watch more movies than the average moviegoer. Even if you go to the movies every week in a year, I guarantee I watch twice as much as that.
Easy. Well, you know what reminds you? I used to work at CompuServe online service. And there was a guy there I knew. This is back before they actually branched into the internet. It was before the internet as the web itself became more organized. It was a mess before. And you had like AOL and CompuServe and Genie and all these other places that were just their own online service. And I knew the guy who sold advertising for the adult section of CompuServe. So the amount of time he spent at work looking at pornography was probably more than anybody else in the office, but that was his job.
I know at least one movie blogger in New York that used to be an adult movie blogger.
Oh, really?
That he had to review porn, like gay porn, regular porn. No,
or was he bi? Or
No, he's just work regular. He's not gay. He's a straight guy. But
that kind of boggles my mind because I'm straight. I would find it very hard to
no
pun intended. Oh, but I would find it very hard to actually because I don't know what necessarily I know what turns me on as a heterosexual male.
Uh-huh.
And I already know that there's stuff that I see in pornography that I've heard about that I see in pornography that I'm like for straight porn that I'm like, well, I don't like that.
Yeah.
So how does he go about saying, oh, well, this is great.
Next time I see him, I'll ask him. But I'm
fascinated about that.
And his approach to it was just like just a regular job. I mean, if this was you know, a good scene, if it didn't last very long or mm-hmm. or whatever, I don't know what his criteria was, but I know at least one adult movie blogger out there, and he also had to review products as well.
What do you mean, like a Fleshlight kind of thing?
Like stuff like that, and like, you know,
chafed.
There's actually a big. I mean, I don't know if you're surprised by this. There's a pretty big industry, not just adult filmmaking, but on the other end of it, like what we're doing right now, but for adult films.
What, you mean there's like a huge podcasting? How do I not know? Why do I not have a show?
Go on iTunes. Look up movie podcasts in iTunes. I guarantee you'll see a couple adults movie ones out there.
Wow.
There's big adult movie blogs like Fleshbot.
Well, I know that there's the blogs, but do they have like people saying that do they have a show where they're talking about be like, yeah, this movie was. I mean, I know that they would review these mm-hmm. movies in like when I, you know, back in the day, back during the years of print publication, if I ever looked at a Hustler magazine, they had a whole section on reviewing the new movies.
Yeah, and I'm always looking for new jobs, new writing jobs, and I always see job postings for adult movie bloggers.
Well, shit, you send those my way because I have no shame.
Next time I see one, I will definitely send one to you.
You'd better, because I'm gonna have to look into this because I need some scratch. That's not what you want to say in that industry, I think.
But I will definitely send you, next time I see a posting, which I do see quite often, I will send you a link.
I don't even want to know. You're like, I troll the internet porno blogs.
I'm looking for work anywhere, man.
You know what? I said this before. This is something I could never do. I would have no problem at all being a phone sex operator. I've known people who've done it before, and I'd totally be fine with it. The problem is my voice. I'm on the radio, not just on podcasts, but I'm on the radio. It's probably not a good idea to do it. I might be too recognized because I, you know, honest to God, somebody recognized my voice the other day. Uh-huh. It was at the radio station that I go to do. I do an in-person radio spot every week, and I'm leaving and I'm talking. I brought my son in because it was right before New Year's and he didn't have school. And I'm walking out. I'm talking to him. This guy was in the lobby picking up some prize package he won by calling in. And he's like, oh, you're Fat Guys in the Movies. I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, I recognize the voice, which is odd. That happened to me once. I was in the gym. I've told this story before, but I was in the gym once and I made a comment to somebody and somebody recognized my voice. I was completely naked. That's awkward. But I guess so oddly related to this discussion we have.
But I guess going back to like what I guess we were originally talking about.
oh, the less fun topic. Let's go back to that.
Logging movies that you watched this past year. Right now, I'm planning to do that for 2012, and I found the best way to do it is just a good old-fashioned spreadsheet.
Word doc or something like that.
I feel that's probably the best way to do it. And I do use GetGlue, you know, to...
What's the other one? Flickchart? I know a lot of people use Flickchart.
Flickchart, there's imdb.com. There's this new one called Letterboxd. It's Letterboxd.
I've heard of that, yes.
.com, which is a good way to manage lists. There's Mubi.com, Mubi.com, and that's a good way to manage lists as well. That's movie-oriented. Mm-hmm. I'm trying all these services, but I feel that just a good old spreadsheet is the best way. But I think the thing is that differentiates us from, I guess, normal people is that we do watch so much more than the average person that it would be pretty tedious to categorize how much we actually watch more so than the average person.
Well, especially for me, like today I was doing work and I just played some TV shows on the back because I end up getting, for example, Desperate Housewives. It's a shitty show. But I was watching it because I get sent the DVDs to review. And so I keep up on it during the year so I don't have to watch 500 hours of television in like August and September. And so I caught up on a couple Desperate Housewives episodes, had them playing in the background. I would never think to check in on that stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I'm at the theater at least 3-4 times a week. And sometimes in that, I'm watching 2-3 movies a day. And also covering film festivals. Like I'm going to be going to Sundance in a couple weeks, and so I'm going to be watching a bunch of movies.
Just
like
you throw a film festival in there, and it kills. Just suddenly you got 50 movies you've seen in a week.
Oh yeah, I am preparing for that as we speak. Just that my record for most movies I've seen in one day in the movie theater is 6.
Wow,
6 movies, and it was doing a film festival. So from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. and I did that 2 days in a row. So 12 movies in 48 hours in the theater. It was pretty tedious.
I go to movie marathons every year, and I talked about this, but in October there was a horror movie one I took my son to, and there was a sci-fi one in the spring. I think the most they once scheduled 13 movies, and they played all the movies. So I think in like 26 hours, because they ran over a little bit, I saw 13 movies in a theater and stayed awake for them all. That's like that was back when I was younger. I could stay up the whole night.
But the thing is, could you write reviews for all 13 movies afterwards?
No. Although, you know, I did go see the horror movie marathon that I saw this year. I wrote little write-ups. I just did blurbs on each one. So that does that count? I saw I think they showed 10. They didn't show as many this year. That was when they showed like a Serbian film.
Oh.
I made my kid go home for that one.
I haven't even seen that one yet. I'm not sure if I want to stay away from that or not, from the things I've heard. But
it's difficult now because the America, the DVD, the Blu-ray release is edited.
Oh, really?
Even though they had to edit it to get an unrated NC-17 cut. And so it's not as impactful as it should be, I guess, as I can say. It's an enigma. One of the things I'm going to be doing in 2012 is I've been doing reviews myself. This is going to be my 10th year of doing actual full blown professional reviews. Mm-hmm. But of course, I've watched movies all my life. And now I've pretty much over the last 10 years, most significant. There's a couple of them that I miss every year. Like I missed A Beautiful Mind. I've never seen that, you know. But for the most part, all the big movies I end up seeing for the last 10 years. But before that, there's a lot of gaps and holes of movies I just haven't seen, classic films. So I'm making a list of movies, because what it is, in October, I watch a horror movie a day. And then in November and December, it didn't do every day, but I have a running list of the award films I watched. And now that it's January, I think what I'm going to start doing is making a list, and not doing it every day, but every, you know, once or twice a week, pull out a movie from these classic lists and watch them. And it's going to start with stuff that's like in my collection. Like I have Gandhi on Blu-ray. Never seen Gandhi. I should see that, you know. I've never seen Cool Hand Luke. I've got the DVD. It's been sitting there for years. I've never watched it. Making a point to see these movies that are considered classic films that have slipped through the cracks in my life to just enrich myself a little bit.
Yeah, everyone has. No matter how big of a film fan you are or film geek you are, I'm sure there's at least one or two movies that are considered classics that you have never seen. For me, I've never seen Casablanca.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and like that's one of the things I like about doing the DVD reviews is sometimes you get sent these older movies that you would never have gone out and see. Especially now, I never go out and get a movie because it's always stuff that's sent to me. That's usually I'm never at a lack of things to watch. And I kind of miss the days where I remember several years ago, I before I was doing so much reviewing, I was like, I've never seen Serpico, and I watched it on demand. And it wasn't a great movie, but I feel at least I saw it, you know? And I remember I was sent to review Dr. Zhivago when it was like its 50th anniversary or 60th anniversary when that came out. And I'd never seen Dr. Zhivago. Wasn't particularly a fan, but I'm like, now I've seen Dr. Zhivago.
Now you can have an opinion about it.
Now I can at least relate to it when somebody mentions it, and they, you know, and I can say, oh, I've seen that, and I can framework. And a great place to start is like I said, I'm starting with what I own that I just haven't gotten around to watching. And then I'm going to go through, I've gone through like, this is not definitive, and it's arguably not accurate either, but the AFI top 100 is a good place to start.
Yeah.
You know? So, that's one of the things I'm going to be doing in 2012. And then in October, I'll go back to watching horror movies. So,
I think I said it. I don't know how I'm going to be changing my behavior movie wise. I mean, I think I'm just going to watch more and more and more movies. I think I'm going to force myself to watch movies that I'm not interested in watching.
Well, I think that's important to do. I think because I see, so I'll give you a great example. I was watching recently, I don't know how recently, it was a while ago. They for some reason I was sent only The Matrix Reloaded on Blu-ray. Warner Brothers did this thing where they were releasing a bunch of their sci-fi titles, and they sent me like a bunch of them. They sent me Mars Attacks and The Matrix Reloaded and A Scanner Darkly. So it was this hodgepodge mix of stuff. And I showed my kids the Matrix series, and I tweeted out or put on Facebook, and I said, oh, I'm watching Matrix Reloaded. And somebody's like, that's the worst movie ever. And I'm like, nah, hold on a second. First of all, okay, fine. I like the Matrix movies. I will defend them, and I still find them enjoyable. But even if you don't like it, hardly the worst movie ever made.
Yeah, there are worse movies. I mean, I like Reloaded, and I'm not really a big fan of Revolutions. Yeah. I love that first movie, but I don't think even Revolutions, I don't think that's the worst movie ever made.
Well, it's like these people would talk about worst of the year, and they're like, and I've seen people like me and Kate Erbland on Erbland. Erbland. Okay. I'm sorry. I always type her name. I don't actually talk to her. So, but Kate and I developed the worst movies of 2011 list for film school rejects. And it was great because we had this massive list, and we're like, well, you take this one, I'll take this one. And like when we publish a list, every time you publish any list, first comment on anything, what about this? You lift this off the list. That's like every single, that's a first comment on any post on that. And so Kate and I did this exhaustive list of actually it was 22 because we each had these, we added two movies at the end that neither of us had seen, but we're like, well, it's got to be shit. But somebody's like, whoa, what about Green Lantern? And I'm like, if you think Green Lantern was the worst movie of 2011, you haven't seen all the movies of 2011. You haven't seen Big Mama's House 3.
See, honestly, I don't think a lot of people who read us that aren't in this industry really know how hard it is to be a film blogger.
Yeah.
Just in terms of something like that, because I didn't care for Green Lantern at all, but I don't think it was the worst movie I've seen this year. I've seen much worse movies than that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I even look at my top 10 worst movies of the year, and there's stuff in there that people like I mentioned earlier, Hall Pass. Did we mention this on the air?
We were off mic.
We were off mic when we were talking about this. But Hall Pass, it actually got bumped off my top 10 worst movies of the year. It's not a good movie. I do not recommend seeing this movie. It's a shitty movie, but it still wasn't. There were 10 more movies that were worse than it.
Yeah, there was I Am Number 4. That was worse than Green Lantern, I thought. You know, and...
But it's not worst of the year.
No, but that's just an example of, well, here's another movie I didn't think was very strong.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, so I think it's tough to do it's you need to see all types of movies. And you need to be able to, you can't just, as a reviewer, you can't just watch the big summer movies. You can't just watch the art house films. You have to watch.
Yeah.
You have to watch the romantic comedies. I have no respect for reviewers who are like, well, I don't like romantic comics, so I'm not going to go see it. I'm like, no, you need to go see it so you can set your barometer.
Yeah. I mean, there are some really fantastic romantic comedies. I would consider something like Midnight in Paris. That was a wonderful film from this year. And that's a romantic comedy. And I feel like there are a good number of people that like want to become film bloggers, professional film bloggers out there, but they're not just willing to see anything. Yeah. Yeah. We have to be willing to see anything at a drop of a hat.
Oh, yeah.
And have an opinion about it, even if it's a movie that's not a genre that we're familiar with, but we have to be as open with it as much as a movie that we're actually really excited for.
I think so. Speaking of movies you're excited for, let's move into what we're anticipating for 2012. What movies or events or anything, what are you looking forward to this year? We're in 2012 now. Aside from the end of the world.
The end, Ghost Rider. No, I'm not really anticipating Ghost Rider.
I know one person who's anticipating Ghost Rider, and that's it.
I am a fan of Neville Dean and Taylor, but outside of Crank, I don't think they're as good if they're not doing Crank movies.
Okay. If they're not doing Crank, they're not.
My most anticipated movie, Dark Knight Rises.
Okay.
Prometheus, The Hobbit, The Avengers. I'm really, really looking forward to The Avengers.
Okay.
Solely because I know that you're not a fan of him, but I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan. And so that's like another thing for me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Joss Whedon. I'm extremely curious about Avengers. I'm really curious to see what he does. I'm curious to see whether he rises above his own. And I'm going to choose my words carefully here. Rise above his own tropes that make it such a, that galvanize it as a Joss Whedon film, and can he direct outside of that and reach a wider audience? Because I think if it comes out as you know, Buffy and tights, you know, if it comes out as a Buffy version of the event, it's going to tank, and his fan base will love it. But I think this is where the rubber meets the road. Can he direct something outside of his core audience?
Well, actually, when I was saying I don't think the Avengers is going to make as much money, I forgot that not only are you going to get the Marvel fans and the comic book fans, you're also going to get the Joss Whedon fans.
Yeah.
And so that's a demographic.
That's good for $10 million.
Yeah. People have seen Serenity in the theater. We know that we aren't strong, but we're there. But I'm curious to see what he does and if this whole experiment with Iron Man and Thor and Captain America will all flesh out.
Yeah,
and it seems like it's on the right track, and everything that we've seen from it seems like it's good. I think it's just going to be a question of, like you said, can it really sustain what has done in Iron Man and what has done in Thor, and can it stand alone as its own movie?
Yeah. And I think it's definitely possible because people say, well, it's a mix of heroes and no one gets a focus. I'm like, well, so is any of the X-Men movies. And while you can have problems with one or the other, take X-Men First Class, which was a fantastic X-Men movie, but it had a hodgepodge of characters and it worked. So yeah. if it's handled properly. And I will
that movie, the center of X-Men First Class was Magneto. I mean, it was a big hodgepodge of superheroes, but I think he was probably storyline A more so than anything else.
Well, that's true, but you can say the same thing about 1 and 2 being about Wolverine.
Yeah.
But you have to do that. And one thing I think Whedon has proved he can do is he can handle ensembles. So let's, I'm curious to see that. What's funny is last night I went through, because I kind of took the week off between Christmas and New Year's and the trickly day or two after New Year's. And I finally kind of got back on the horse and started like refocusing on, okay, let's get back to work. And I looked through the release list I just went to Box Office Mojo and went to the release schedule. And it was the most depressing thing in the world to look at what the release is. Because there's some, and you mentioned some. I'm curious about the Avengers. I'm very interested in Prometheus. I haven't watched the trailer because I want to, as much as possible, go into that movie cold and just experience. It's going to be tough, but that's one that I want to do.
Have you seen Alien?
Yeah. Well, no, but that's the point. I want to go in.
Go in.
I mean, I know the connection to Alien, but the whole thing is I don't want to see a trailer that gives anything away. And I'm going to try to avoid it as much as possible. And The Hobbit, while I'm not a huge Lord of the Ring fan, I think that looks like it's going to be a good movie. And The Dark Knight Rises, I still have reservations about it. I don't know. We'll see. There's no movie that's on the list except maybe Prometheus that I'm like, I'm really, really interested in seeing. You know, and
did you like The Dark Knight, the 2008 Dark Knight?
Oh yeah, I loved it. It was one of the best of the year. But that's the thing. I'm afraid it's going to become, it's going to have a hard time living up to it.
I think that it's going to be in that corner no matter what. I mean, I guarantee no matter how
it's not
going
to be as good.
Well, exactly. No matter how good this movie is, you're going to have at least a good number of people saying, well, it wasn't as good as Dark Knight.
Yeah.
It has to be way better than Dark Knight. It has to be way better than Inception as well. And I don't know if any man or any filmmaker can live up to those high expectations.
I'm curious of seeing John Carter. I'm interested in that. I'm reading the book now.
I'm curious for John Carter. It's also like Mission Impossible 4, the director of John Carter, Andrew Stanton. It's his first live action film as well, like Bird. With Mission Impossible. So I'm looking forward to that.
So I think the ones that I'm, there's a bunch that I'm going to go into with like lower expectations, like Wrath of the Titans. I liked Clash of the Titans. I liked it. I'm sorry. I liked it. So I'm curious to see what that's going to be like. I'm not looking forward to all the re-releases in 3D. I'm not, I think Beauty and the Beast, Finding Nemo, Titanic are all going to be what, you know, I think The Lion King was a fluke.
Okay.
I really don't think that Beauty and the Beast is going to make the money that Lion King did, and Finding Nemo probably.
I don't know. I mean, Beauty and the Beast is a very good movie by itself.
Oh, it
and
is.
Nothing big in January.
The problem here's the problem with Beauty and the Beast, though. They just released, like, a year or so ago, Beauty and the Beast on Blu-ray for the first time. So yeah. I don't know if it's fitting in. Like, Finding Nemo, I think, will have a better shot because it hasn't had that big Diamond Edition release.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like people had the chance to get the new copy instead of just some crappy old VHS or scratched up DVD.
I don't know. I mean, just doing this for, I mean, I haven't been doing this for very long, but I never want to underestimate the power of Disney.
I think they might be burning their fields, though. I think they might be going to the well too much with, because Beauty and the Beast, and it's so soon after Lion King, and then, Finding Nemo's coming up. This might be sort of this rate of attrition that might happen. But you know, you're right. Didn't Disney
always, like, at one point re-release their older movies? I mean, I know when I was a kid, the first movie I saw in the theater was Bambi.
Oh,
and that was like early 80s.
Oh yeah, they do. They do re-release stuff all the time. So, but yeah, I mean, those could be good. I'm looking, a lot of people think I'm an idiot, but I'm really looking forward to Phantom Menace in 3D.
Oh man,
I want to see the lightsaber battle in 3D. I want to see the pod race in 3D.
As much as I do not like the prequels, I will say Phantom Menace is a better movie than Attack of the Clones, solely for
Attack of the Clones. I like all of them. I'm a Star Wars whore. I like them all.
Well, I think I like Phantom Menace more than Attack of the Clones, solely for Ray Park was in Phantom Menace, and that his stuff in it is amazing, and that's worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Jake Lloyd versus Hayden Christensen. I'm not sure who wins on that one.
Well, neither one's that good. I mean, they're out-acted by a breath mask in the other movie, so. but like, the big ones, the ones that everyone's talking about, I'm cautiously optimistic about. Like I said, The Dark Knight Rises, The Amazing Spider-Man. I'm like, what? Do I have to sit through the damn origin story again just so he can have his non-biological web slingers?
Yeah, I'm not really looking forward to Amazing Spider-Man either.
there's a lot of other things. I mean, you got stuff like, and then there's stuff that I'm just, this is going to suck balls, is like Rock of Ages. That's going to be terrible. Madagascar 3 is going to be terrible. You know, I think G.I. Joe Retaliation is going to be okay. But you've got, you know, other things like Battleship, which is going to be probably suck, and Men in Black 3. It's just, there's just not, it's this nonstop mess of just what's going to be, what I'm afraid are going to be terrible movies.
You know, the thing about Men in Black 3, I like Men in Black 1, and I'm okay with Men in Black 2, and I was actually kind of looking forward to Men in Black 3, and then I saw the trailer, and I just think Will Smith is far too old to be playing this role, because I like Will Smith, but the character of Agent J is this young, irreverent guy, and that's
very hip guy who is in his
very irreverent, not really with authority. And Will Smith is like almost in his mid to late 40s now, and I just don't see that, like, that kind of charisma anymore playing this kind of what would be a younger character.
Well, when the first Men in Black came out, he was in his late 20s, I think, when he made that movie.
Or
he was playing late 20s. He may have been in his 30s.
But I think that's it, though. I think you know, just that kind of youthfulness that comes with Men in Black is warranted.
Yeah, you're totally right.
But by 3, I don't know. He's kind of really kind of old now, if you look at it.
Well, I think he's a little, like, too cool for school. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that whole shtick that he does is come and gone.
That's fine. Yeah.
And
that's fine for Fresh Prince, but not this part in his career.
Yeah, I think Men in Black 3 is going to be a god awful movie. I'll be curious to see how 3D, because there's a ton of 3D movies coming out, and recently 3D has been hindering box office simply because it's too expensive, and so we'll see what happens with these. You have your aberrations like the Harry Potter and Transformers did extremely well and hit these top grossing worldwide numbers. But a lot of them, a lot of the movies that are 3D, just not, you're not getting the payoff that Hollywood originally thought they were going to get.
Now, well, The Hobbit's going to be in 3D, so I'm curious about that, because Peter Jackson is actually shooting for 3D in a different, he's shooting it at a different frame rate than what you would typically shoot 3D movies in. So I'm going to be interested in that.
Oh, no, I think that's cool. I think there's some that are going to be neat to see. And like I said, but it's very, very short. There's some that I'm curious about, like Great Gatsby. Curious to see what Baz Luhrmann does with that. But I mean, some of these you just read and you're just like, oh my God, that's you got the last Twilight movie. That's going to be awful. You've got in Skyfall. I'm looking forward to Skyfall because I love James Bond. But, you know, aside from that, I mean, all these other things, Halloween 3D, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Taken 2, that probably is not going to be that good. Resident Evil 5. You know, these are things that you read. I'm looking at this list and I look and I'm like, and I just sit there and you're like, oh, it's like I have to go see that.
I'm looking at this list and just thinking, man, Hollywood is more out of new ideas than I've ever experienced in my entire life.
Like Total Recall, you're like, oh, that's going to be bad.
It's all remakes and reboots, but then it's Scary Movie 5, Step Up 4,
yeah,
Taken 2, Paranormal Activity 4.
And it's not that Hollywood has, this is not a new time for Hollywood doing sequels. They were doing sequels out the ass in the 80s as well. The slate does not look that promising.
I don't think I've ever seen anything get past 3, really, like 4, 5, 6.
Well, Police
7,
Academy.
Well, even though it like ended up being straight to video type movies, yeah. But we're getting like theatrical movies in prime spots in release dates that are 4, 5, 6. What's that about?
And there's like two Tyler Perry movies coming out this year.
Wow.
Because that's what we need. We got one in February, one in July. So I don't know. There's like I said, I do not think, because every year you always look at it and be like I remember 2007, the summer of 2007, you're like, oh, Spider-Man 3, awesome. We're going to be seeing Pirates of the Caribbean next. And you're like, oh, you're kind of intense. And then you see them and you're like, yeah, they weren't that good. But this year I'm like starting off with the, oh, that's probably not going to be that good. Maybe I'll be wowed. Who knows?
Well, I guess my most anticipated movie of the year is the new Quentin Tarantino, Django Unchained. I was a huge fan of Inglourious Basterds. I'm not really a big fan of Kill Bill or Death Proof, but I am a fan of Quentin Tarantino. So I am looking forward to his new film.
I like movies that Quentin Tarantino makes for an audience rather than for himself.
Yeah. Oh, I'll agree with that.
And my problem with Inglourious Basterds is it just went on too long. It was a talky. He had two whole scenes, and while they had suspense, like the opening scene where, who was the guy that Christoph Waltz played?
Honda.
Yeah, he comes in and he's talking, and you know the people are underneath the floor, and I'm like, okay, I get it. You're dragging it out. That's fine. And then they did the same thing when they were in the bar downstairs. It just dragged on and on and on. And part of it was because they advertised. I thought it was going to be like wall-to-wall killing Nazis for like 2 hours, and it wasn't. So, and I thought Death Proof was the same way. I had this inane talking for like 40 minutes before anything really happened.
Well, I think it works better in Inglourious Basterds than it does in Death Proof. Yeah. I don't like Death Proof at all. I think Death Proof is a very good movie, and I'm not a big fan of Kill Bill as well. But I feel what he does in Inglourious Basterds, and I think it's deliberately that he does go that long because he really wants to build that tension. He wants to see how far he can stretch an audience. Yeah. And it might work for some and might not work for others, but I feel when he lets that rubber band go because he's building this tension so much, something really explosive or exciting is going to happen when he lets that go. And it does, scene after scene after scene. So I feel the payoff was completely worth every time he just holds that thread.
Well, you're going to Sundance this year, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to stalk Quentin Tarantino and try and videotape him while he's having coffee?
If he spits in my face, I'll consider that a win.
Yes, do it. I want to see it happen. I want to see him kick you. Not that I want you to get kicked, but no, I've met in person. You're not like a big guy. You're not like you're not a strapping. I don't know if I'd say strapping would necessarily describe you. You're smaller than Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I'm a mousy man.
And I just would love to see that. Just, I would love to see him rail on somebody, you know, cause you're smaller and you're a very just approachable, nice guy. And I just want to see him rage on just somebody that he just should have no reason raging on.
And I will love every minute of it. Quentin Tarantino got mad at me story for the rest of my life.
You're missing a tooth. You're like, ah, it worked. So I expect that from you. Sundance, please.
I will deliver that.
Okay. Let's move on to the Fat Guy Five. And this is tipping of the hat to the only movie opening wide this week, new. And these are five great exorcism moments in film. So I kind of made this list because you're not a big horror movie fan, really, are you?
I like some horror. I mean, I will readily admit that it's probably the genre of film that I know very little about.
Okay.
I'm more of a sci-fi guy than I am a horror fan.
Okay. Well, so yeah, this list, I'll just rattle these off, and if you've seen them, you can chime in. Of course, the granddaddy of all exorcism movies is from The Exorcist. And this, of course, the famous pea soup vomit scene. I'm assuming you've seen The Exorcist.
Oh yeah, The Exorcist. It's a very terrifying film.
Great movie. And
it's something you don't want to see with your mom.
You know what's funny? My grandmother went to go see it because she was like a real pious Catholic.
Oh man.
And when it came out in 1973, the Catholic League supported it, of course, because it was very positive for Catholicism. And so she went and saw it, which I cannot imagine my little old grandma. I mean, she died in the 80s, but this my little old grandmother who was just like frail and weighed like 25 pounds going to see this movie going, yeah, that's right. You teach them bitches. I don't think she talked like that. So yeah, great movie. The next one is from The Last Exorcism. Did you see that one?
I did not.
This one was one of those found footage sort of, you know, mockumentaries. The contortionist movements, because what they did is in this movie to help, although they kind of blew their hand in the end of the movie, but when they had the girl who was possessed, they got a real contortionist to twist around and do everything. So she gets in these weird ass positions and her body's like, looks like she's like broken up. And it's really this girl in these positions. She's a professional contortionist. So those sequences were really fantastic on screen. The next one is from Beetlejuice, which I'm sure you've seen.
Oh yeah. I've seen Beetlejuice.
They're just the general bioexorcism attempts of Beetlejuice. The very classic banana boat song.
Yeah.
Day-o. Scene.
See, if all exorcisms were much like that, you know, with Harry Belafonte music,
oh yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'd be on board with that.
Yeah. So those are all great. There's great special effects, great weird stuff going on by Tim Burton. The next one is from Wreck 2. Did you see Wreck 2?
No, I haven't seen. It's also Quarantine is the American remake, right?
Yeah, well, Wreck was remade into Quarantine, and they take a much more Quarantine was. You saw Quarantine then, right?
No, I didn't, okay. And it's one that has always intrigued me. Like, oh, this looks like Cloverfield, so I kind of wanted to check it out.
It's a great movie, but the Quarantine, it's just super rabies, and that's all it is. I mean, it's a biological thing. They take it into a weird spiritual way with the original Wreck movies, and the second movie delves deeper into it that it's more than just biology that's happening.
So. And Wreck, these are Spanish films?
Spanish, yeah. What was funny is because I got Wreck out, I reviewed Wreck 2 last year because it came out, at least in America last year. I don't know when it came out in Spain. But, and I'm listening to it, I'm reading the subtitles. And I have kids, so I see a lot of Dora the Explorer. So I'm suddenly recognizing, because there's a scene in there in Dora the Explorer, she always says, can you help me do this? And that's what she's like, ayúdame, ayúdame. And so they're running around going, ayúdame, because it helped me. So it's this weird crossover of language. but just for those who've seen Wreck 2, it's the attic sequence. This is sort of, you know, the introduction as to who of what's really going on. Great exorcism moment. There's also the Amityville Horror, the original, not that god-awful remake. When that's
one.
Did you see the original of that?
No, I didn't see the Ryan Reynolds was in the remake, wasn't
yeah.
he? Hal Jordan himself.
Yes, Hal Jordan and, well, Melissa George isn't known for anything other than just occasionally showing up and stuff. But, the Amityville Horror, Rod Steiger comes in to bless the house. And of course, it's not really technically an exorcism scene, but he goes to bless the house and the house, let's just say, reacts to him and exorcises him from the house. Honorable mention would be a deleted scene from The Exorcist, which is on the director. Well, I don't know if it's the director's or the extended cut, which is available on Blu-ray. The infamous crab walk scene where she walks down the stairs. Have you seen the remastered version of The Exorcist?
No, I have not.
It's a great sequence in the book. It's a terrifying sequence in the book where she kind of gets contorted around. She crawls down the stairs backwards and she's bleeding out of her mouth. And they reinserted it in the movie. And it's one of those few times where they appropriately used newer filmmaking techniques to smooth it out and reinsert it into the movie. And it's creepy as hell because you don't see it coming, except now that I told you about it. the dishonorable mention is every courtroom moment in The Exorcism of Emily Rose. Did you see that movie?
No. This was like last year or a couple years ago?
It was a while back. It was probably about 5 years ago. And the problem is that it's based on a true story, but I think the story's from like, it's either from Germany or like Northern Europe, like maybe like Norway or something like that. It's somewhere else. It's somewhere in Europe. And they made it in America, and the courtroom sequence, it does. What always bothered me about it, the exorcism scenes were cool, but the courtroom scenes, it didn't even look like they watched Law and Order before they just started making shit up about how a courtroom works. So it's bad.
I wonder how many of these movies were released in January.
I don't know. Possible. Well, there's one that was probably released in January. You had one you wanted to kind of just give a nod to. You're one of your favorite exorcism movies.
Oh, Repossessed?
Yes.
With the great late Leslie Nielsen.
Yep. Repossess. The best part of that movie is that opening sequence where he's in the classroom.
Yes.
And he asks her, can you lower your skirt? Can you lower your dress? Because she was hiking up her skirt.
Oh, yes.
And she takes her top off.
The 8-year-old me loved that. I think me right now loves that scene as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm not 8, but I am totally okay with that scene.
And I guess thanking my parents that I could rent movies by myself.
Yeah.
And that's actually not a rated R movie. It was a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, that was back at the time when you could show your knockers in PG-13.
And that's like the opening scene of the movie. And that's PG-13.
Yeah. Sort of like Shame. You're like, whoa, there it is. with that, we better go to a break.
Okay. All right, we are back.
Yay! Fat Guys in the Movies. Thank you for listening. If you didn't listen to the middle segment, or the third segment, you're on the radio, you may want to. We've moved back into blue humor into that middle segment. Thanks to Rudy for bringing it back.
Professionalism. That's me.
We had a brief moment for the last couple of weeks where it was actually relatively cogent and relevant discussions. And it's good to see that we're back in our, you know, stomping grounds of the gutter. Although we do talk about some good things. We talked about kind of what we're looking forward to in 2012. We talked a little bit more about The Devil Inside. We did a Fat Guy 5 of great exorcism moments and box office as well, amongst other things that we can't mention on the radio. But now, what do we have coming up here now,
Rudy? Now it's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right. And that is, if I actually have to say, I'm kind of impressed with Hollywood releasing movies each week, because it's been in terms of DVDs, because a lot of times what they do is they front load everything in December. And then like right at the end of the year, there's like almost nothing that comes out because they figure people have already bought it for Christmas. But I think they've realized that people get gift cards.
Yeah. That they probably make more money after Christmas because there's more spending money to throw around.
Exactly. So is there any DVDs that you want to mention that either came out this week, or if there's anything that, you know, you want to just highlight that you've seen recently?
Contagion. That was a really good one. Moneyball. Does that come out next week?
Moneyball's next week. Yeah.
I
would have loved to have been Monkeyball.
Monkey Ball, the Japanese remake.
Well, when people were tweeting about it, like before it came out, and because I wasn't following it, I thought it was Monkey Ball. And from that point, the fact that I thought it was Monkey Ball, anytime after that, it was already set to fail. Because I'm like, this movie could not nearly be as awesome as a movie about monkeys playing baseball.
Well, first of all, there was no monkeys in the movie, so.
Well, that's the problem. But there were monkeys in Contagion.
Quite a few. There, Contagion, that was a pretty good one.
This is actually the perfect time to watch Contagion. It just came out on DVD and Blu-ray because it's cold and flu season.
A good way to scare people to, wash their hands.
This should have been this should have been released in January or February, because I remember seeing this. It was like September, I think it was when it came out in the theaters. And when you're in the theater and you hear somebody cough, you could feel the tension in the room, because if you're watching War Horse and somebody coughs, you don't care. But if you see Contagion, where it's like super flu that's going to kill 20% of the population. Yeah.
And Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. That's a good one.
I thought that was a pretty good one that a lot of people didn't see in theaters, but I feel that since now it's on DVD and Blu-ray, please check this one out. This is a pretty good horror movie.
I think a lot of people didn't give it a chance because it wasn't Paranormal Activity. It didn't really have any big name. I mean, the biggest name it had was Katie Holmes, and who cares about her? I think it just got kind of lost. I think it suffered by the fact that wasn't it released in like August?
It was released in August I feel it should have been released in October, but
totally a Halloween. Because
of that whole Paranormal Activity phenomenon, no horror movies outside of Paranormal Activity will ever be released in October.
Although there's a lot coming out in 2012. They look terrible, but they are coming out. At least they're going to be R-rated horror movies coming out in October.
And see, that's the thing. I think that's why I get so turned off by horror, because a lot of them do look terrible, but then there's actually good ones like mm-hmm. this one that people don't watch.
Yeah. Other ones that are coming out this week, there was The Guard. Did you see The Guard?
Yeah, I thought The Guard was pretty funny.
I thought it was a fantastic movie. Yeah. Brendan Gleeson was great in it. John Cheadle was there. I mean, he did a good job, but it was Brendan Gleeson's movie.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was a pretty good duo nonetheless. I was pretty surprised how much I liked The Guard.
Yeah. There's also Shark Night, which was a 3D movie that came out this fall. Did you see Shark Night?
I missed Shark Night. Unfortunately, I missed Shark Night.
I was not a big fan of Shark Night, and I know a lot of people who loved it because they thought it was irreverent. I was not a big fan of it. It's making my list, but because we'll get to the stinker here in a minute. There's also Alfred Hitchcock Presents Season 5, if you like that old classic TV show. Neat little Twilight Zone-y kind of thing. Was there anything else you wanted to highlight?
I think that was about it.
All right, let's do the stinker. The stinker is I don't know how she does it, or I don't know why I watched it, or I don't know how it got made. This is a movie that I actually went out and watched. I rented, watched it, and I have to say it knocked Hall Pass off the list as one of the worst movies of 2011. It's so bad because it's this. First of all, it's dealing with concepts and angsty arguments of women in the workplace that were like early 90s problems, and it's this movie about a woman who wants to be a mom but wants to have this big high-powered career, and the reality is you can't be a mom, you can't be a stay-at-home parent, you can't be a constant caregiver and have a 50 60 hour a week job that involves travel. It just doesn't work. So, and plus it's just awful. Don't see this movie. Anyways, review wrap-up. We had The Devil Inside, which gets a preemptive suck because they didn't screen it for us. And then next week, we got Beauty and the Beast in 3D. We'll see what happens there. Contraband with Mark Wahlberg and Joyful Noise with Dolly Parton and Queen Latifah. Anyways, we got about 30 seconds. Rudy, thank you for being on the show again. And
no
tell
problem.
Tell us where to find you and what where to go for all things Rudy.
For everything Rudy, go to rudiobias.com.
Wow, that was... You only took 10 seconds for that, but thank you. Thank you again for being on the show. You always do. You're always great. And you can also check you out at you do the AutorCast.
AutorCast.com and also Shakya.com is where you can find me.
Excellent. Thank you again. And we will see the rest of you guys at the movies.